Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, June 6th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt's negative budget balances a threat. Kelp Fest telling the story of seaweed, and Arcadis Fairy Fest returns. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Several of Humboldt County's government departments are operating in the red, which concerns county staff. Daniel Mentz reports.
In a budget presentation, Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors was told that several county departments have negative fund balances, which county staff described as, quote, a threat to the general fund. The next fiscal year begins July 1st, and supervisors considered its $606 million budget at a June 4th meeting. A written staff report says the state's draft budget has come as a, quote, shock to local government in the form of widespread program reductions. And the federal budget, quote, faces a perfect storm of rising costs and stagnant revenue. That impacts funding for the county's Department of Health and Human Services. Deputy County Administrative Officer Jessica Maciel said the department's social services fund is of most concern.
Of primary concern is the social services fund. As previously reported, this fund has gone negative. At the mid-year, staff estimated improving the negative fund balance due to outstanding long-term receivables. Over the past several months, DHHS staff have determined that there are not sufficient receivables to fully correct the negative fund balance. They anticipate ending fiscal year 23-24 with a negative fund balance of $16.9 million, and they expect to receive $3.9 million of outstanding receivables in next fiscal year, which will result in a continued negative fund balance of nearly $13 million. This is a significant downturn from the previously reported outlook for Fund 1160. DHHS staff have reported that they are working to establish strategies to reduce expenditures and save discretionary revenue in order to remedy the negative fund balance.
Another department with negative fund balances is the Department of Public Works. Storm disasters have caused the DPW's multimillion dollar negative balance as road repair projects await federal reimbursements. Maciel outlined the road fund's fiscal struggle and the ballot measure effort that seeks to address it.
The roads fund, of course, we've been talking extensively about. It's estimated to end 23-24 with a negative fund balance of $8.5 million, which is an increase of $758,730 in negative fund balance. Currently, Public Works reflects Federal Emergency Management Agency reimbursements of $8.1 million to be outstanding, which nearly is the full amount of their negative fund balance. The disaster responses require utilizing funds that were planned for road maintenance, reducing the amount of road maintenance that can be completed. So your board directed staff to develop a local revenue measure for roads and essential services, and this item will return to your board in July. And if approved, will be placed on the November 2024 ballot.
Maciel also updated supervisors on the status of the county's Measure S cannabis excise tax. A two-year suspension of it has been lifted, and some cannabis farmers have entered into back tax payment plans. She said about $500,000 in Measure S payments have been made so far this year, but there's about $5 million in tax debts. Measure S revenue isn't being estimated for the coming fiscal year due to what Maciel described as its uncertain nature. Supervisors approved several budget recommendations, including a hiring freeze. But Regina Fuller, the sheriff's office's financial services director, warned that the freeze will result in law enforcement service cuts.
For at least our deputy sheriffs and our dispatchers, if you can make an exception and not put a hiring freeze on those two classifications, unless you intend to instruct our office as to where we are to cut services. So if you intend for us to reduce dispatch or patrol services in the next fiscal year, then yes, a hiring freeze. But if you don't, we would appreciate an exemption to that. You know how long our backgrounds take and our recruitment. So it would really be helpful to not have to come before your board to hire those classifications.
Supervisors will further hone in on the budget during afternoon and early evening public hearings on June 10th. The budget is set for adoption on June 25th. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The Humboldt County Sheriff's Office is seeking public assistance to identify suspects involved in a violent carjacking and shooting incident in Fortuna on April 13, 2024. Lauren Schmidt brings you the details.
Earlier this Thursday afternoon, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office issued a request for public assistance in identifying suspects involved in a violent carjacking, assault, and shooting incident that took place in Fortuna on April 13th. At approximately 11:15 p.m. that night, deputies responded to reports of a carjacking and shooting in the unincorporated area of Newburgh Road in Fortuna. Upon arrival, they found a local victim suffering from multiple injuries, including a gunshot wound. The victim, a 60-year-old man, had been attacked and shot in his garage, sustaining severe injuries, such as a laceration to his eyebrow, possible eye damage, a potential broken arm, detached teeth, and a gunshot wound to his shoulder. He was immediately transported to a nearby hospital, where he is currently recovering. Preliminary investigations revealed that two suspects, described as males wearing dark clothing and masks, approached the victim's vehicle, forcibly removed him from the car, assaulted and shot him before fleeing in the stolen vehicle, a white 2017 Toyota Tacoma, with license plate number 14709K2, had its front window shot out. The sheriff's office released photos from the victim's surveillance system and urges anyone with information about the incident or the suspects to contact them at 707-445-7251. Anonymous tips can also be submitted on their crime tip line, 707-268-2539. Photos of the suspects can be viewed on the KMUD News Facebook.
Summer kicks off with the Fairy Fest in Arcata. Ryan Christensen brings you the details.
Huzzah! This Sunday brings with it the return of Arcata's Fairy Festival. I was lucky enough to be granted entrance to the realm of fairies to speak with none other than Shoshana, Queen of the Fairies, first of her name, and protector of the realm.
I'm Shoshana, one of the creators of Fairy Festival, which is an event that started in 2018 as a smaller scale thing, and then 2019, then nothing for a few years, came back last year, was pretty big. People really stepped up their amazing costumes they created, their art installations, lots and lots to do. Celebrates the whimsical in our community and with some out-of-town people too. We've got a lot of live music, artists and vendors. There's some food supporting some local school kids, and just a lot of magic and merriment all around the plaza in Arcata. It came out of wanting to do something more whimsical and maybe a little less focused on food and beer, but more focused on magic and sparkles and just giving people a space to really have an intergenerational space to dress up, to make magnificent hair pieces, to interact with each other, to have costume contests. And it's been all that and more. It's really been exciting to see it develop and grow and people really having just so much fun bringing their creativity to share with everybody else. It's hard to start out a festival, so like starting kind of from zero, we tried to break even, of course, that's like a goal, but then also to, not cost money, but then being able to have a format for local nonprofits to be able to fundraise. So we had the first two festivals for benefits for Humboldt, for CASA of Humboldt. This last year and this year, we've been partnered with Redwood Rocks Collective, which is our nonprofit dance space in Arcata. And that space that I'm in right now provides a lot of practice and dance class and event space for dancers and movers all across the community for a long time, but most recently as a nonprofit, Redwood Rock.
What can one expect at this magical gathering?
Lots going on. This event goes from noon until 10 p.m., so it's a little later so that we can accommodate a fire show in the evening. So our grand finale is a fire show. We start off, we have a maypole dance, which even if people don't have experience, it's a fun thing to try out. Harder than it looks, but we start out with a maypole dance at the beginning. There's bands and dance performances happening on two stages. The enchantment stage is the little bit bigger one. It has more bigger bands and dance groups performing. And then we have the storytelling stage that has some smaller acts, but lots going on throughout the day. The storytelling stage is interspersed with performances with aerial shows. So we have Emerald Aerials has their big tripod aerial rig, and they'll be doing three shows during the day, so that'll alternate. We have three giant dragons coming to the festival this year. Two big installations that have been created. One was a kaleidoplane previously, like a kaleidoscope you can crawl inside, and now it's a kaleidodragon. And we have another dream dragon and a dragon that's a giant puppet that goes through events sometimes and will be coming in the evening when it's lit up. Just a lot of variety of things people are bringing, but we will have a costume contest at about 2:30. People can sign up for that, and just the whole event is a showcase of creativity.
What type of crowd should someone expect at this event?
Well, sometimes people think it's only for fairies, but it's also dragons and gnomes and trolls and goblins and everything's welcome and invited. So leprechauns, and maybe we could have anything join us. So if you think you might fit in, come on down. Pirates, got everybody. It is free and open to everybody. Everybody is welcome to come and check it out. It is definitely a very intergenerational event with lots of children, but a lot of families there, a lot of adults coming to check out the scene and show their creativity as well. But there are definitely, especially early in the day, a lot of families, a lot of little people. We try to intersperse like that festival feeling where there's lots of people, lots going on, with little lounges and interactive hangout spots across the festival. So between a lot of vendors, the vendors have an opportunity to host little areas that are decorated and fun and might have an interactive thing to do, but are quiet spaces around the event. So you have a lot of places to hide out. Also, there's a gnome dome. It's a little tent that's a mushroom that you can go inside and learn about the world of gnomes. There's just little things tucked around all over. A couple of tea lounges, so you can explore in small spaces as well as the bigger festival feel.
And with that, dear kindred spirits, be sure to return to a land of merriment and delight this Sunday, June 9th, from noon till 10 p.m. at the Arcata Plaza. A full list of performances and attractions are listed at arcataferryfestival.com. I shall see thee there. Look for the handsome merman with a microphone. Reporting from a forested magical land where adventure and magic hide behind every corner, I'm Ryan Christensen.
This weekend is the 47th Annual Summer Arts and Music Festival on Saturday, June 8th and Sunday, June 9th at the Mateel Community Center. We reached out to a representative for the Mateel Community Center about the upcoming festival.
Hi, my name is Elena Worley, and I'm the office administrator here at the Mateel Community Center, and we are gearing up for the 47th Annual Summer Arts and Music Festival at the Mateel Community Center this year. So we're doing a mini festival on site, and we'll have vendors inside and outside. We'll have a kids zone. The Mateel will be doing a food court on the back porch. We have an outdoor stage, and we have our main stage will be inside with a really heavy lineup of local musicians. And our headliner for Saturday night is Brett McFarland. And Sunday night, our headliner is Mama Grows Funk. And so we have a lot of people, local, regional people who are going to be coming and playing. So we hope everybody comes out and enjoys the event. It's $25 in advance right now. And then at the gate will be $30. And that's for the weekend. So it's $25 for the weekend, $30 at the gate for the weekend. And then if you're coming for the day, it'll be $20 per day. And if you're a member of the Mateel Community Center, you do get a $5 discount for the weekend passes and the day passes. And if you're a senior, you also get a discount. That same $5 at the gate.
Historically held at Bembo State Park, the festival has been held at the County Line Ranch the last 2 years after COVID put a halt to the event and park rentals. This year, the festival is at another location, though familiar to the community.
We're doing it at the Mateel this year due to, you know, some issues that we had financially doing it at CLR. We had to make a pretty tough decision to have it here at the Mateel Community Center. It was a financial decision that the board did make.
In addition to the financial reasoning behind the location change, the Mateel's resurrection of the world-famous Reggae on the River event has been lauded as another reason the arts festival has taken a shift away from the bigger and more expensive vibe of the last few years, focusing instead on a community-focused event at the heart of the arts festival's origins.
Yes, Reggae on the River, we have our co-producer, Hot Milk Entertainment, that is helping us put on the event. If we had that for Summer Arts Fair, we would have been able to do that at County Line Ranch, but that just didn't happen this year. So we're just taking it back to the roots here at the Mateel.
Though at the smaller community center venue, the staff and volunteers have plans to pack a lot of excitement into every nook and cranny of the Mateel Community Center property.
So there will be vendors all in the parking lot. The lower parking lot will be full of vendors. There'll be vendors inside the Mateel, upstairs of the Mateel. The outdoors will also have some vendors along the back area on the other side of the food court. And then the bar for beer, wine, and spirits will be out near the outdoor stage. And so we have people will be everywhere. Vendors will be everywhere.
Worley and the Mateel staff invite the community to join in this weekend's festivities.
We hope that people come out and enjoy the event. It's going to be a really nice weekend, not too hot. So bring your kids, bring your families, bring everybody that you want to come hang out with and see people in the community. This is like our kickoff to the festival season.
To learn more,
you can go to summerartsandmusicfestival.com or you can go to the mateel.org website for more information, and you can buy your tickets at summerartsandmusicfestival.com.
The 47th Annual Summer Arts and Music Festival is an all-ages event with free admission for those 12 and under, accompanied by a parent. Festivities kick off at 10 a.m. on both Saturday and Sunday. Turning to Mendocino, scientists on Big River Beach engaged visitors in learning about kelp during the first ever North Coast Kelp Fest, a three-week event featuring art, film, food, walkabouts, and science talks every weekend until June 16th, organized by Mariana Luschel to raise awareness about the critical role of kelp and urchins in the ecosystem. KZYX's Sarah Reith reports.
Scientists on Big River Beach were enticing visitors to learn about kelp over the holiday weekend as the first ever North Coast Kelp Fest got underway. It's a three-week extravaganza about kelp, urchin, and their place in the ecosystem with art and film, food, walkabouts, and science talks every weekend until June 16th. It's the brainchild of Mariana Leuschel, one of the key organizers of a campaign called Above Below, which seeks to bring the knowledge of the deep onto the surface.
Well, it really started about 3 years ago. I've been a resident on the Mendocino Coast for 18 years, and I didn't know about the loss of kelp on our coast until 2020. And I just was shocked that not only did I not know, but it seemed that so many people that I spoke with really weren't informed.
That's changed in the past few years as scientists learn more about urchin and kelp. The California coast has lost 96% of its seaweed canopy due to imbalances in the marine ecosystem. The loss of the sunflower sea star, the only remaining predator for purple urchin, has allowed the urchin to graze on kelp unchecked. The kelp plays a vital role in providing hiding places for other marine life and slowing down erosion by diffusing the energy of oncoming waves. Bennett Bugby is a graduate student at Moss Landing Marine Labs specializing in kelp. The Phycology, or Large Algae Lab, has been working on kelp restoration off the Mendocino coast since 2021. Scientists have figured out a way to encourage bull kelp to generate reproductive patches of spores called sori in the lab. They've experimented by planting bags full of sori, or sori bags, in restoration areas. Last year, researchers from Moss Landing and Sonoma State University planted sori bags and placed rocks that had been seeded with lab-grown kelp into an area that had a low density of urchin. The remaining urchin devoured the kelp off the rocks, but an incidental circumstance led to a promising development.
We had these lines out underwater to help us navigate between our plots, and the kelp grew on those lines, and they, because bull kelp is buoyant, started lifting the lines off the bottom of the ocean, and the urchins couldn't get to it. And so we figured this like technique of sauri bags and growing kelp off the bottom was like a good technique to go forward with it. So last year, 2023, that's the two techniques we used at Albion, and we had really good success. We were able to grow bull kelp from spore to a full reproductive adult in the ocean for the first time on the California coast in a restoration setting, so that's really exciting.
This year, researchers will start a pilot study, planting the sauri bags on elevated lines off of Portuguese Beach, which is part of the Mendocino Headlands State Parks. The goal is to restore 5 acres in the next 2 years. Rachel Carm is a research technician at Brent Hughes Lab at Sonoma State University, working on the Portuguese Beach pilot restoration project. Kelp restoration consists mainly of keeping it away from urchin, which do great on rocks, but don't much care for sand.
So we're kind of taking a patch that's surrounded by these sand channels and trying to really protect this patch and remove urchin, and then also like have these traps around so that way any encroaching urchin, they're already deterred from the sand, but if they do make their way, they'll be trapped and kind of protect this area that we're trying to outplant.
When is this planting occurring?
We're still in the experimental phases. So we're testing some of the modules that you've heard about already, these kind of raised modules. I think we began 1 month ago testing those. And this weekend we went out and surveyed them and checked on them, and they look really good, which is super promising. The kelp grew immensely in just 1 month. And then the plan is to begin urchin removals relatively soon, and then the kelp outplanting would happen shortly after that.
And where else is this project being attempted other than Portuguese Beach?
For this year's project, this really highly collaborative, synergistic project with the Nature Conservancy, Moss Landing Marine Labs, Reef Check, the Sea Urchin Commission, that's being done only at Portuguese Beach. However, for the past few years, we've done some experiments at Albion Cove in Mendocino.
The effort is funded by a 2-year, $1.6 million grant from the Ocean Protection Council and Sea Grant, which are trying to restore kelp across the state. Tristan Inish McHugh is the Kelp Project Director with the Nature Conservancy, which has long been at the forefront of kelp recovery efforts. And she's learned a lot about the most promising natural conditions for that 4% of kelp that's survived.
There are certain tendencies of where we're seeing them, by freshwater confluences, by high energy locations like off pinnacles, places where urchin don't necessarily want to go to or can get to. So urchin can't eat and hold on at the same time.
And I think a year or two ago, there was some optimism about the return of the sunflower sea star. Somebody had a sighting. Has there been any more news on that front?
We have seen a couple sightings. I think the most recent one was off Mendocino Headlands about a month ago now. Yeah, and then there have been a couple subtidal or underwater observations as well. One somewhere, you know, South Mendocino County and Central as well. So they're around. However, we are still seeing some level of sea star disease in the water. And so we're still keeping a very fine eye on the recovery of any sea star, including sunflower stars.
The sightings have included various sized sea stars, which may be cause for cautious optimism. And there are populations in Washington and British Columbia. To learn more about the Kelp Fest events in Fort Bragg and Mendocino, many of them free, you can visit northcoastkelpfest.org. For KZYX News, I'm Sarah Reith.
In state news, pro-Palestinian protesters greet Vice President Harris at 2 Bay Area fundraising events. KPFA's Zenick Ball reports.
As attendees arrived at the fundraiser at the Chapel, a live music venue in the city's Mission District where Harris was scheduled to speak, protesters used noisemakers and heckled them from behind a police barricade. Harris was scheduled to meet with Democratic donors at an event hosted by Manny Yekutiel, a longtime civic activist. Lara Kiswani is the executive director of the Arab Resource and Organizing Center in San Francisco, which organized today's protest. Kiswani said the Biden administration has not done enough to pressure Israel to end its military offensive in Gaza.
Well, it's one administration, and both have actually said and named the need for a ceasefire. But this administration calls for a ceasefire on one hand, while actively funding and arming the genocide on the other. The bombs that fell on Rafah were U.S.-made bombs. You cannot say you're for a democracy. You cannot say you are for a permanent ceasefire or any sort of ceasefire so long as you're aiding and facilitating this genocide. This is a U.S. war as much as an Israeli war on the Palestinian people.
Christina, who declined to give her last name, is an educator and an activist in Berkeley. She told fellow protesters that the protests will follow Biden administration officials everywhere they go until they withdraw their support for Israel.
We are not going to allow anyone from the Biden administration, especially not Biden and Kamala Harris, into our city without this sort of pushback. They are not allowed to come here without facing us and facing the genocide that they are complicit in, that they are enabling. Shame on them.
A Palestinian trans activist who goes by their stage name Mama Ganoush spoke at the rally. They said they have lost over 200 family members in Gaza during the war.
My family was looking for shelter. I raised so much money because of the American administration limits so much financial aid to Palestinians. I suffered so much. It cost $5,000 to save a Palestinian to go to the Palestinian border and cross to Egypt. I had to go a full 2 days figuring out who should I prioritize. Who should I prioritize from the 35 people that are left of my father's family?
A Biden campaign organizer declined to comment on either Vice President Harris's appearance at the fundraiser or the protest. Before arriving in San Francisco, the vice president came from another fundraiser at a private home in Oakland. Just before Vice President Harris's scheduled arrival, police ordered protesters to clear out from in front of the venue and move south on Valencia Street as they prepared to close the street. A majority of protesters complied with the order. At least one protester was arrested and led away by the police. Back in March, Harris called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza prior to a meeting with Israeli War Cabinet member Benny Gantz in Washington. She also criticized Israel for restricting the amount of aid it allowed into the enclave. Around the same time, NBC News reported Biden administration officials had softened the tone of Harris's remarks. According to the report, the White House is reluctant to strongly criticize Israel while it tries to secure a ceasefire and a hostage release deal. I'm Zin Iqbal, reporting for KPFA.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, and thanks to our reporters, Zin Iqbal, Daniel Mintz, Lauren Schmidt, Sarah Reif, and Ryan Christensen. KMUN News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see related stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.